It's one of those songs that for decades has been a standard in the American repertoire. Crooned as a country tune, sung as a sultry jazz ballad, wailed even against the scream of guitars, it was originally and is at its heart a great blues song. Ain't nobody's business if I do. It's a product of what well may be the most prolific period in American creative history, the Harlem Renaissance. Written by Porter Grainer and Everett Robbins, it was first recorded in 1922 by Anna Myers, backed by the original Memphis Five. It opens with a bridge, setting the stage for its unmistakable sentiment. There ain't nothing I can do, nor nothing I can say, that folks don't criticize me. But I'm going to do just what I want to anyway. I don't care if they all despise me. Then it progresses into a determined declaration of indifferent defiance. If I should take a notion to jump into the ocean, ain't nobody's business if I do. If I go to church on Sunday, then cabaret all day on Monday, ain't nobody's business if I do. Its original release was followed soon by versions from those magnificent queens of the early blues, Alberta Hunter and Bessie Smith. Billie Holiday, Mississippi John Hurt, Ella Fitzgerald, Hank Williams Jr. all recorded it. B.B. King performed it live with Gladys Knight, Chaka Khan, and Etta James taking the verses. And Eric Clapton did it live with just a single piano accompaniment. Both because of its ubiquity and its assertion of independence, Ain't Nobody's Business is a candidate for the Great American Song. Of course, the further up the pyramid of privilege one progresses, the more able one is to sing it, believing that it is actually possible to live with its fiercely personal perspective. I will do as I like, think what I like, buy what I like, use what I like. I will believe as I like. And it's none of your business. So you can just mind your own business. From 1920s Harlem, we travel back five centuries before the Common Era to Thucydides' magisterial history of the Peloponnesian War and Pericles' famous funeral oration. It is in part a long paean to provincial pride, offering a carefully honed sense of civic superiority. Line after line extols the clear and obvious ways in which Athens is exemplary in its system of government, recreation, military, civic engagement, bravery. Athenians are simply better. There's a telling line amidst all of this boosterism. While discussing their social framework, Pericles asserts, "This is a peculiarity of ours. We do not say that a person who takes no interest in politics is a person who minds their own business. We say they have no business here at all." Such was the Athenian notion of democracy, the very antithesis of ain't nobody's business. For these ancient Greeks, it was an egregious violation of virtue not to care about the polis, that is, the city where one was, the larger community. To take no interest in ticks was simply unacceptable. To keep to oneself, to tend to one's own affairs, to care primarily about one's own well-being, to mind only one's own business is to have no business being here at all. The Greeks had a name for such a person, idiotes. To be an idiotes was to be self-centered, focused not on the palace, but on private affairs. It carries over into the modern Greek, where the word for private is idiotikos. While we get our words idiom and idiosyncratic from this Greek word idiotes, there's a more obvious derivation from this word. Idiot. An idiot in Athenian democracy was someone who was private, self-focused, self-centered. To fail to have concerns for the larger order was to be thought of as an idiot. One of the primary principles of our liberating religion is an affirmation of, as we say, the interdependent web of all existence, of which we are a part. There's little question that we really do think that's important, and even less doubt, that we have not yet begun to fully understand and embrace the radicality of that assertion. Taken seriously, a profound commitment to live as if we are a part of an interdependent web requires a deep suspicion about any assertion that, well, it ain't nobody's business what I do. Taken seriously, a profound commitment to live as if we are a part of an interdependent web requires us to acknowledge that to care only about one's own business, to care nothing about the larger order of things, is to be, in the classic sense of the word, an idiot. Ecofeminist and co-founder of the U.S. Green Party movement, Charlene Spretnik, offers a more positive spiritual reflection on interdependence. She reminds us there are sacred moments in life when we experience in rational and very direct ways that separation, the boundary between ourselves and other people, the boundary between ourselves and nature, is illusion. It's illusion. I experienced such a moment late on a Friday evening last September. For the third night in a row, I had made my way uptown where thousands of people continued gathering and marching during the Charlotte uprising. It was a part of what our local paper continues to insist on calling violent riots, then in their fourth day. Except on this night, and for almost the entire time, at least on the part of those of us protesting, there was no violence. And there was no riot. I fell into a march through the streets of our city. I was seeing people I knew, others I recognized. There was energy, there was spirit, there was a sense of purpose. As we made our way up Trade Street, I started hearing music, singing. As we approached the corner of College, the music grew louder until I discovered, standing on the sidewalk, a gospel choir. singing with infectious fervor. I left the march, drifting over into the crowd, encircling the choir. And that's when it happened. So much that was so negative had been written and said about us. People believed the narrative of fear and threat that filled the print and broadcast news accounts. But this was beautiful. People of all races and ages in all manner of dress, an older clergywoman next to a young, heavily pierced activist, a trans person of color alongside a parent with a young infant, and all of us listening to an impassioned song about a better time to come. For just that moment, I felt like I was one little part of something boundless, as big as justice, as immense as love. We shared in one big business, deep concern for the polis, for the city. It felt like a mini splendored tapestry of interdependence, engagement in something far more expansive than any one of us could be about by ourselves. It was an inspiring, it was a spiritual experience. By year's end, however, I was completely depleted. Carving out a couple of late December days away, I found myself unexpectedly on the banks of the Wilmington River, at the outskirts of Savannah. It was clear. A crisp breeze rustled the tall grass. I was, with intention, breathing deeply, trying to take in the soul-saving beauty of that scene. I stood for a long time, just breathing. Then I heard something. It was a little whoosh. And in a moment, another whoosh. I stared out over the river, trying to figure out what was making that sound. Finally, I noticed it. A bottlenose dolphin was making its way up the river, breaking the surface and exhaling audibly. Whoosh, whoosh. And another, a pair of dolphins, gracefully curving through the wind-stirred water. As if that were not spectacle enough, a large heron swooped down. I'm not making this up. Right over where the majestic marine mammal swam. The sun overhead, the breeze through the tall grass, the wide expanse of the river, the dolphins, the heron. I felt in that moment like the boundary between me and all of it blurred. I was simply a part of it all. It was an inspiring moment. It was a spiritual experience. As our board now beckons us in their call to action, to spiritual, societal, and environmental transformation, I'm imagining those two seemingly incongruous scenes, an urban march and a brackish river. And I'm dreaming of the spiritual place where the two scenes are in fact one. I'm imagining us finding ways to experience much more deeply that the boundary between ourselves and other people and the boundary between ourselves and nature is illusion. That the health, safety, dignity, and respect of each of the people in that unlikely circle uptown and the health, safety, dignity, and respect of each element of the river scene might meet in our engagement in transformation. And that the boundaries between the two settings themselves could begin to blur as we recognize with much greater spiritual insight that we are a part of it all. What do you think? Are we ready to open our minds, our hearts, our souls a little more than we ever have before? Are we willing to face with honesty the awareness that even our worthiest habits and traditions bear the stain of the larger system of privilege and supremacy? Are we willing to risk our discomfort in order to listen to and to learn from those who can help us see both the urban scene and the river scene much more clearly? The future of our life, suggests Mary Evelyn Tucker. The future of our life may depend on the largeness of our embrace.